Not even the Hatsune Miku pillow can illuminate my life. No.
I have Hatsune right here.
I don't even know what that is. I just know that the fucking.
Broke Azario, congrats.
I just know the fucking Domino's commercial. That's why I know who Hatsune
Oh my gosh.
Is.
Welcome to episode 28 of the Total Control Podcast, brought to you by oprainfall.com for the week of March 26th, here where we try and satisfy some, if not all, of your niche gaming needs. I am one of your hosts, Cesaro Lopez, and with me today is Justin Guillou.
Good evening.
And coming back, Josh Spears here.
I live.
And also, Arthur Augustin.
Decided to take on my last name this time.
Yeah, I decided to say it right.
Really not that difficult to pronounce.
No, this looks that hard.
I didn't want to bully you anymore. I knew you were getting really salty about it.
I was just thinking about it every night, man.
I got all your emails, dude. I saw.
Got all of them? Did you check all the other accounts that you may have blocked? Because I kept sending them.
I put you in spam in a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, Total Control is recorded every week and posted to oprainfall.com and iTunes. If you enjoy the show, we ask you to please follow us on Twitter at the Total Control. Now we're going to begin the show with what we're playing. Justin, let's start with you.
So I finished Tokyo Twilight Ghost Hunters, and I have a review coming real soon. Yeah, finally. I'm done with that one. Oy.
Did you ever learn how to play it?
I can't answer that question. I think I do, but whenever I feel like I know everything about the game, something else comes up, and it's like, well, I gotta learn that now.
That's good. Just like life.
Just like life.
Is there like a new game plus to it that actually like rewards that part of the game at all? Or is it just kind of like you're done with it?
You know what? When you finish a game, you can actually start a new game and you can continue your file. And then I just said, you know what? I'm not getting in on this. There's probably like a whole novel of other game mechanics that gets unlocked in New Game Plus. Not even touching right now.
You start it over and there's like a new story all of a sudden.
I wouldn't put it past this game at all. There's already multiple endings. Alternate characters you can recruit. I can't even describe it. Otherwise, I've been playing Smash Bros. Yeah, that's right, Azario. People
play
Smash Bros. Still
dusting off the old Smash Bros.
Cool.
You like open up. You like open up the case and you like blow all the dust off. That's cool. Did you have fun?
I did.
That's good, dude. Just do things to have fun. Mm-hmm. You know. Who cares what I think about that game?
You don't like Smash Brothers, Azario?
I just think it got boring after I unlocked all the characters.
Like all of them? Like there's just
I enjoyed Melee.
Okay, but since Melee, you're like forget it.
Yeah,
he's still stuck on Melee.
I could play Melee. I don't know. I don't care about like Melee. I always cared about. Maybe it's just because I grew up. You know?
You're like, maybe if I can't wave dash, then forget it.
I do. I don't know. I just I think they could have did Smash a little better by maybe releasing characters over a few months. They didn't have to charge for them. They could just release them. And then you just you kept coming back. You would keep coming back to play these new characters because I just unlocked all the characters and put it away. And we discussed this in the last episode.
Okay.
A little bit.
Sorry.
It's okay.
I didn't listen in protest.
Because you weren't on it.
Yeah.
I really like hearing my voice.
Mm-hmm.
But that's good, Justin. Did you play online?
No. How did I do that?
I don't know. Maybe I just don't have enough friends to play these multiplayer games that are meant to play with friends.
Fighting games typically are.
Yeah, did you ever get to Mario Party 10?
I did not, because unfortunately I didn't really have anyone over. But that's going to change soon. Hopefully I can have a Mario Party party.
I'm going to have that sick rager at Justin's house.
Mm-hmm. I have some kegs too.
Yeah, BYOB.
BYOB.
BYOK.
Yeah.
That's good, dude. I don't have friends for that game either.
Aww.
It just gets really
awkward silence.
I'll be your friend, Azario.
I know, but you won't play online with me. Have you even tried Mario Party yet?
No, I haven't gotten around to playing it yet.
Hmm. I hear it's not doing too well.
Yeah, I know.
Is that like a new Mario Party that just came out or something?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. It just came out last week.
I don't keep up to date with the various Mario releases.
It does have some good unlocks if you're using Amiibo, though. You get more out of it.
Are there like hooks with the new Mario Party games when they come out? Or is it just like, hey, it's another one?
It's pretty much another one.
Yeah, I didn't even see any... like any advertisements for it. Like usually people are just talk about Mario Party for a little while, but it just came out.
I'll be honest. This is the first Mario Party game that I actually bought at launch. I generally never buy them. I think I only owned one other Mario Party, which is Mario Party 4. And that's because I found it at a Goodwill for about $4.
Okay.
So what made you want to buy this one?
I just figured, well, it's on the Wii U. I like the Wii U. And it'll be a great game to play when I have friends over. So
is this Wii U only?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the last one was on 3DS.
Okay. Yeah, there was one on 3DS. And then there was a couple on the Wii. Mario Party 8 and 9. Yeah, those were both on the Wii.
Did you say it's not doing well? Or does it just not seem like anybody's talking about it?
I think the targeted audience is more towards children. And I think they're allowing reviewers that are adults to review the game, but I think it's targeted towards a younger audience.
Well, the problem
I wonder with if that's it just
sure. The problem with it is like the people reviewing it probably have played the other Mario Parties, and one of the biggest complaints with this one is that there's less content, there's less characters, less boards, less mini games. So
I was going to say, I was wondering if it's just part of contributing to a general dissatisfaction with how the Wii U is going, you know? Like, it's just like...
Oh, no, no.
I wouldn't go that far. No.
I don't know anything. That's why I was asking you guys what you thought, so...
Yeah. So is that all, Justin?
That's all.
Oh, well, do you recommend playing Tokyo Twilight Ghost Hunters?
Yeah. I do, actually. If you're really interested in visual novels, definitely check it out. Just be aware and like be warned that you might have to spend some time trying to figure out the mechanics, even look up a few guides if you have to, because they're not exactly self-explanatory. And the game kind of assumes that you know them. And if you don't know these mechanics, you're going to be lost. You're going to think the game is horrible. But once you understand them, it becomes a lot more fun. The storyline doesn't really blow you away, but it also doesn't go on for too long. It never, like, overstays its welcome, so you can kind of forgive that.
Cool. So, yeah, you can pick up that game now if you like what Justin is saying. Josh, let's catch up with you.
I've been alternating between also Smash Bros. And Hyper Devotion Noir on my Vita. I really like that game. I'm really close to beating it, and there are a couple of things it doesn't do really well, but overall it's a solid game. Really entertaining.
What doesn't it do well?
It has too many boxes. There's like all these maps where just to get around you have to stack them as a staircase to get up.
And it's just like in real life.
Yeah, it's just really confusing. It's like some Tetris nightmare almost. It's really, really odd.
So is it like you're pushing the boxes?
You can toss them on top of each other and lift them.
Ah, okay.
But it's like the main the CPUs can fly when they're in the HD mode, but no one else can. So if you're not flying, you have to make these stupid staircases to get anywhere, and it's a weird mechanic in a strategy RPG like that.
Yeah, because that's like something you would have in a overhead action game. Well, not even an overhead action game, just like an adventure game, like puzzler, like in a Zelda game.
Yeah. That would make more sense in a Zelda, but this is...
Disgaea does stuff like that. Like, to get up to other areas, you kind of have to stack your players up, though.
Yeah. So. I guess it would make more sense if it was not just random cardboard boxes you find across the maps. For me, I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have to go out of your way to get them?
In some maps, yeah. Especially towards the end of the game, you have to, like... One map I just did, I spent, like, 8 turns just making a staircase to get up to fight the enemies. So it's kind of like, But... It is a really fun game. Don't get me wrong.
Now that I'm on spring break, I think I'll finally play that game.
I think you'll really enjoy it. I mean, it's...
Here's another question, which is going to sound unusual coming from me, but how is the fan service?
It's pretty good. It's pretty entertaining. There are generals you recruit who are all female, and every time you recruit them, there's this little scene with Noir that plays out that's usually pretty entertaining and or saucy or both. So... It's good.
I know there's some kissing mechanics to this game where it's like put them
next to each other. You seem to know a lot.
There's the lily point
system. I see
the
videos.
When you have characters next to each other and they do special attacks, they get lily points and it shows them kissing. And it could be like up to 4 people around you. And it gets – you use that to trigger your really powerful attacks. So, yeah, there's kissing. Lots and lots of kissing.
Just like in real life.
Spread the love.
So, yeah.
Every time I want more power, I kiss the people next to me.
Okay.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. But, yeah, is that all?
That's all I've been playing so far, yeah.
Okay, cool. Arthur, let's catch up with you, man.
I've been gone for a week, as we've talked about previously, but the only thing that I've actually been playing of note, which isn't even noteworthy because it is 6 years old, is a game called Demon's Souls, which is only somewhat relevant because the game that came out this past week that is kind of tied to it is Bloodborne, which is by the same studio From Software, which is not technically part of the Souls franchise, but... From what I understand in all the press content that they've been putting out there, they basically refer to it as if it is part of the Souls series, even if it doesn't have the same name or is part of the world or anything like that. It plays the same way and has a lot of the same similar mechanics. But since I can't afford to buy that, I've been venturing into the past and playing the first game that sort of started everything, which was Demon's Souls. It came out in 2009. And what was kind of interesting was that I actually bought Demon's Souls when it came out because it was making a bit of a buzz at the time, and I wanted to know what the big deal was, and I was in college at the time. And Demon's Souls, well, now everybody knows what the Souls games are all about. You kind of need to invest a good amount of time into them. So when you're a freshman in college, you don't really have a lot of time to be sitting in your dorm room playing the same level over and over and over again. You kind of want to be doing other things with your life. So I beat the first two bosses. I opened up my PS3 to look into this. I have the first two trophies for beating the first two bosses. They're both unlocked October 11th, 2009. And then now I beat the third boss, and it's unlocked like March 20th, 2015, and then there's nothing else between that. So that was my experience with the game until like this past week or so, because it turned me off immediately, and I never really wanted to play it because I just didn't have the time for it, and I wrote off the Soul series for a long time. And I think I gave Dark Souls a fair try like 2 years ago. And for some reason, I got stuck somewhere, probably on some boss, and I got pissed about it and then dropped that. And then I gave it another earnest try a year ago, and I ended up really liking it again. I think that's kind of what everybody does. Like, if you don't like it the first time, then you have this love-hate relationship for a while, and then eventually you sort of get back on the horse again. So I'm kind of now I can say I actually like the series, but it's taken a while. Have any of you actually played the series at all? I don't know if I'm just talking to myself here.
I've played Demon's Souls, but you're right. It really depends on where you are in life when you pick up these games, because if you're going to college and you're trying to play it, it's it's not going to work out. You're going to put it down.
Yeah.
You really need to dedicate some amount of time to it. Not too much, but it is a trial and error type of game. Like, if even especially if you're not online, something with Demon's Souls, people will leave
notes on the ground.
Notes on the ground, like, around this corner, these two guys are probably going to kill you, or cut that rope right there to let these boulders go. To give you hints, sometimes they lead you to your death.
Those are the best ones, honestly, because there's like this like weird morbid humor in the community. So there will be things like there are ledges that you can see, but you can't get to unless you drop down. So there'll be a note saying, like, try falling, because you can't write whatever you want. There's only like certain things you can put. So it'll be like, try falling, and you'll fall, and you'll get there, and there'll be another note, and you'll be like, all right, what does this one say? And you'll open it, and it'll just say, mistake. And you'll have to, like, fall to your death or something. And, you know, like, the community just thrives on that stuff. And, you know, the first, when you're a newcomer or when you're in college, when I first played it, I was like, fuck these people. And, like, fuck people who like this game, like, this is driving me crazy. I don't know why people like this game. And worse is the people who get mad at you for having those thoughts of frustration and anger for not liking the game. They're just like, you know, like the most common response that people have when you're saying, like, I'm getting stuck, I'm getting frustrated. They'll say, like, well, have you considered getting good? And, like, that's the most, like, obnoxious thing ever. And that's really annoying. And yeah, and it does the game a disservice, honestly, because I don't think the developers have that in mind. They're just like, well, if you don't like your game, maybe you should stop being such a fucking scrub, you know? Like, they generally they want you to be like liking the game. They want you to be getting better and learning and stuff. It's just for some reason this community just sort of has this mindset. But if you kind of get past that and you start actually enjoying the game on your own terms, you can kind of actually enjoy the humor that comes with the notes on the ground that tell you to do stupid things and then you falling for it. And when you see those notes in the future, you can kind of tell, okay, this note is actually not helpful. And I know this from experience because I've played this game. And then you can see other notes that actually are helpful and you sort of get a vibe for it. And you sort of learn the world of the Demon Souls or the Dark Souls or of Bloodborne. So I'm not that far into it. Like I said, I've only beaten three bosses, and just looking at the trophies now, it looks like there's well over 15. So I really haven't scratched the surface, but that's really a good thing for me because I really want to play Bloodborne, but that's probably not going to happen just because of the situation that I'm in right now. So it's a great opportunity for me to just go back into the past and just kind of see where this whole thing is coming from. And like I said, I like Dark Souls a lot, so hopefully it is at least a little bit similar to that.
Think it's a lot. I've heard that Demon's Souls is a lot harder.
That's what I've heard too.
Yeah.
There are some things.
I love how everyone has the same story when they first start Demon's Souls, is that they're on the bridge. To the first map, you're on the bridge, and those skeleton guys killed you. Like, everyone has... And then, but later on, though, you always kill the skeleton guys and just walk right past them. But the first time you're on that bridge, it's like the first level, everyone says that either they died by them or they were super close to death by these skeleton guys.
I actually don't know which one you're talking about. Are you talking about, like, the tutorial level or something?
No, not the tutorial. After the tutorial level, you start on a bridge, and then it's... there's like a big gate right in front of you, and then you're supposed to go left.
Uh-huh.
But just along this bridge, there's all these skeleton warriors, and they're supposed to be pretty easy. But the first time I died, and it's not you're not supposed to die. You know, like, or maybe you are, but it's just it's crazy how even the weakest enemies in that game can kill you. You have to take every battle so seriously in that game.
Okay. So you're just talking about the very beginning of the game, the one.
Yes.
Oh, those are technically undead, which is.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I made the same mistake as well, actually, because the thing is, like, you think you assume they're skeletons, and then later on you find actual skeletons, and then you're like, oh,
I was wrong.
You know, like with the spooky skeletons, you can see their bones and stuff, and skeletons don't fuck around. Like they're no joke. But anyway,
I know in that game that every boss there's a glitch to beat it. So I did that glitch every single boss. I had game facts open the whole entire time I was playing that game. Don't shake your head at me, Justin.
You're playing it wrong though.
Dude, that game's hard, man.
Yeah. I know, but
I would every time I would die, I would shut my PlayStation off before it autosaved so that I can just start again.
I think for a lot of people, the reason they die on the early enemies in that game is you kind of go into Dark Souls.
Just not playing it right.
Yeah, yeah. But like, you kind of just go into that thinking, okay, I can kind of just button mash my way through this. But then you realize, oh, there's actually a pretty big delay with my sword swings. And then you get hit by an enemy and you realize like how much damage they did. You're like, whoa, I'm not expecting this at all.
Yeah.
Especially when you're in soul form and your HP is just cut by half.
Right. I mean, one of the first items you get, it increases it so it's 75% reduction or 25% reduction instead of 50%, which is helpful. Yeah. But like around the time, like the thing is now we all take for granted that we know what a Souls game is. So like we know all enemies do a lot of damage. So getting hit at all is something you don't want to happen ever. Mm-hmm. But like at the time when the game came out, it was like, when you play an action game, you take hits. But if you don't get hit a lot, then you'll be fine. And you can always heal or something. But like when the game came out, people didn't have that perception. They're just like, I got hit like 2 times and I died. Like, what the fuck? This game is insane. I don't want to play this anymore. And it wasn't like it felt good to play. It didn't feel like a Devil May Cry or a Ninja Gaiden.
Or like a Zelda type of game where there's always health around the corner.
Right. So it felt like either cheap or poorly made. And, like the pedigree of the developer reinforced that. They're like, okay, these guys made what? Armored Core? Like the mech game? Like, okay, I don't think these guys know what they're doing. So a lot of people sort of assumed that they didn't. And, eventually, over time, a lot of people figured that there was actually something else going on. So it was really interesting to see how these random developers have really blossomed into what they are now. And, we're probably going to talk about it more later on in the show, but it's interesting how these sort of no-name developers have gone from being the niche to sort of the mainstream. I mean, Bloodborne is, in a way, the first big title for the platform in many people's eyes. That's kind of like the first AAA title for a lot of people that they actually care about. I mean, compared to other games like Infamous or something, this is the one that they actually bought the system for, which is crazy to think. I'm sure nobody would have thought that would have been the case when Demon's Souls came out.
And Demon's Souls itself was produced by Sony, but localized by Atlas.
Yeah, I was going to say Atlas published that one.
Okay, but Sony had the rights to they had to change the name from Demon's Souls to Dark Souls because Sony has the rights to Demon's Souls or something like that.
I believe so. That's actually the same with Bloodborne, which is why Demon's Souls never went to PC and why Bloodborne is probably never going to go to anywhere but PS4.
Yeah, if Sony puts money into something, you're going to know that it's not going to go anywhere else.
Right.
Like Helldivers will never go anywhere else.
It's been fun. I was gonna say actually about it being like harder. I haven't noticed it being like super harder so far. The only thing that's fundamentally different from the other games so far is that there's no flasks that can be recharged. There's only like herbs that you eat, and like there's varying degrees. Like some only add like a small amount of health, some add like a huge amount of health, and you can like replenish those by buying them. Also, a lot of enemies drop them, but they drop them all the goddamn time, so it's really a negligible thing. But other than that, I mean, it's basically the same game, so I don't know if it's harder or easier. It seems about the same as far as I can tell, honestly.
There's a little pro tip in the beginning, the first level. There's like this tower that you can run up, and there's this really hard enemy that you can get to chase you. You get him to chase you, and then he'll just fall down the stairs and give you like 3,000 souls.
Yep.
I did that so many times. Whatever, guys.
There's a bunch of stuff like the in addition to the moment that everyone has where they get like stomped in the Souls game. I think everybody has the moment where they have like the pure satisfaction moment, and to me that happened in Demon Souls and Dark Souls. I think my Dark Souls story is better, so I'm going to tell that one instead. So what happened was there's this boss that you fight on a short bridge. He has like this big hammer that he swings. It's like a really short bridge, and you can fall off the side, so it's really bullshit. I think his name's the Taurus Demon. It's like one of the first bosses you fight. So it was my first time playing the game. It was my second time fighting this boss, so I knew he was coming. And I was really pissed off because I like knew the first time fighting him that he was bullshit because like I died immediately the first time fighting him. So this time I was like, you know what? I don't even fucking care. I'm just going to charge right at him. I'm going to try to hit him as many times as possible. So I'm running right at this guy. He lunges at me and I was near the ledge. So he actually lunged over me all over the ledge and he died instantly. So I was like, I killed the boss instantly. I got to the save point. Turned off the game and I didn't play it for like a year or something. So I wasn't going to top that. So
you won at life.
Yeah, I beaten Dark Souls as far as I was concerned. So.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. So hopefully that will happen again in my time with Demon Souls. But anyway, that was when I was playing, and I've been talking for like 15 minutes. So
yeah, but yeah, Demon Souls is a great game.
It's going far.
Did Dark Souls come to PS4? Dark Souls 2?
No, neither one or two have come to the next.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard of them coming, but
it's on PC. Maybe
oh, is it?
Yeah.
They do a bunch of mods there. They probably make it look like a PS4 game, huh?
Yeah, it looks pretty nice. I didn't like Dark Souls 2 at all. I stopped playing it. That's part of the reason why I started playing Demon Souls. So
I'm surprised I haven't made Dark Souls remastered yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a thing. I guess it wasn't.
I don't know. I mean, I guess they would need the developer to be on board to actually do that. And they're probably like, why don't we make, like, I don't know, actual games instead of...
Yeah, you're right. From Software used to make Gundam games for Bandai Namco, too. Maybe they still do, but they did the Ace games. So you're right. Yeah, they came from like kind of a no-name Japanese publisher to what they do now.
Right.
Pretty cool.
Weird.
I guess moving on to me, I've been playing more Type-Zero and having a lot of fun with it.
So I found out that game is actually like a PSP port from 5 years ago.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't know that.
It's because Square hates us. They won't give us the Vita version.
It looks good, though. Like it's not a bad game. There is something that happened that surprised me. I think it was chapter 2. You kind of go to war. Your class gets kind of attacked, and it has like this overview of a world overview on the field map, and you have to attack armies as they're attacking as they're pushing against your army, and it's really weird. Like it's. To the point where it's kind of unnecessary. It doesn't make sense why you're doing this. But it was the weirdest thing that I've had to do in a Final Fantasy game. But basically, you just take over towns as the enemy pushes towards your army. And it's just arrows pretty much pointing at each other over and over again, and then they'll disappear, but you have to like stand in front of them and attack the other arrow, and this is all on the field map too, so it's very strange. And as you attack the arrow, your arrow gets closer to their town, and then you take over the town, and I don't know,
is this game like Harry Potter but for Final Fantasy?
Yeah, it could be,
because I hear there's like school and like children, you like go to class and stuff.
Yeah, it's cool kind of because the size of the school is pretty big. Like
Justin is cracking up, but it's
because I'm picturing it right now. Harry Potter.
He likes when anyone says anything bad about Square Enix games.
I am reading the Harry Potter book, so I am like ready to jump into
the world.
I just want to learn, guys, and fear for my life at the same time.
I think the school is big enough to be a Hogwarts, so I can see that. But it's just a strange thing. There's also something that I found that I don't like. Between battles, when you have to defeat a room full of enemies to move on, there's like this weird awkward time in between where you have to wait for all the enemies that you just defeated to disappear before it allows you to move on. So you're kind of just running around for a little bit, waiting for the clear sign to pop up. And it's really clear that this is happening on the field map battles, the random battles when you're running from town to town. And it's time consuming. And I wish like they kind of made it so it's faster in between battles, but you just have to wait for the enemy to disappear, and it gets really annoying after a lot of battles going from place to place. I do like it. I like it a lot. It's kind of hard to level up all 12 characters that they give you right away, and it's also hard getting a grasp on all their personalities because they're so different, but they're not really rememberable. Like, I don't remember anybody other than Ace, which is probably the main character.
And favorite, from what I hear.
Yeah. Him and Deuce, actually. Pro tips. If you level up this girl, Deuce, she plays a flute, but she's OP. Like, if you get her high enough level, you basically won the game. She has really strong magic attacks. She'll heal you whenever you need it.
Okay, on. Does this character have a magic spell that does a lot of damage?
Yeah.
When you cast that spell, do you say you're about to drop a deuce?
I'm sure. Well, I have it in Japanese, so I mean,
okay.
Right.
You have to learn to say that in Japanese.
Yeah.
The cool thing is that your characters, if you turn this function on, your characters can play while you're not playing and gain you, I think it's called SPP, maybe? SPP, something like that. Basically, your ghost, when you enter a dungeon, you can turn on, do you want other players to help you? So other players' ghosts will go into your game and it'll be like, 420 Bong Toker just entered your game, level 16, you know? And then so that you'll see like the ghost of that character, and then the guy will just start attacking for you, and he'll stay in there for a while, and as he's in there, the longer he's in there, the more SP you get, and then he'll leave, and then he'll come back. But during this time, you can't switch characters on your own because they just take another one of your party members' spots. So if you want to use multiple characters and you enjoy that, switching between them, then you have to turn it off. And it asks you every time you enter a dungeon. It's cool because you can spend these points getting weapons and armor back at Hogwarts. So.
Hogwarts.
Is Deuce your favorite character to play as?
I play as Ace, and I have Deuce on my team. I've been using King a lot, too. I know that their names are all kind of shitty.
They're all like card names, really?
Yeah, they're cards.
Yeah, they're all card names.
My name's Jack, right?
Yeah, there's seven, eight, and nine.
King should be a woman, just because.
And Queen should be a guy.
Yeah, Queen should be a guy. I bet not.
But yeah, so what I find hard is figuring out all of their personalities and matching that with their name and trying to remember them. It gets kind of overwhelming. Because usually in RPGs, you have a cast of three in the beginning. You get to know them, and then slowly new people will start coming. You know, and I'm used to that, but in this game, you kind of just have to choose your party and roll with that. If your party member dies, you have to replace them with one of your reserves. And if that's like your strongest person, it could really hurt you.
They have permadeath in there?
For each until your party is dead, your party member is dead until you return to the school.
Oh, okay.
So if you're on the field, yeah, if you're on the field, they'll still get experience, I guess, the experience that they won in the game. But if you completely you lose all your items and stuff if you completely get wiped out.
So what you're telling me is there's no Phoenix Downs in this Final Fantasy?
There is.
Really?
Yeah, there
How's
is.
How's that work?
Wait, no, there isn't.
So that's how you're
reviving. I was thinking of Final Fantasy 15. Okay. There's Phoenix Downs in Final Fantasy 15.
I mean, like every Final Fantasy I can think of, there's Phoenix Downs, but...
Yeah, there's Phoenix Downs in Final Fantasy. If there is in Type-0, I haven't used them.
Okay, interesting.
I've used plenty of Cure, though, that's for sure. It is a very hard game. You kind of have to remember... that there is no auto aim. There's like a kind of an auto aim, but you're gonna want to press R1 on every character that you're facing. One thing that's really cool is the summons in this game. You get to control your summons, like kind of like Final Fantasy X, but not turn based, obviously. But you walk around, and the summon has its own attacks. It has its strong attack. And cool. It's really cool. It has lots of HP, and usually when you're fighting bosses, you're going to want to summon.
What summons are in this one?
Dude, they have them all. You have to manage them, though. If you're in a small space, like a hallway, you're not going to want to summon Bahamut or any of the bigger characters. Shiva, on the other hand, if you summon her, she'll fit in these small places, these small halls and stuff, and that'll actually work. But you do have to think what will work, because some of their attacks won't go through because they're in those small places. So it may make sense.
Do they have like a size rating or something to tell you how big they are and if they'd fit or something?
Yeah, like a range.
Or are you just kind of have to wing it?
Yeah, you collect these summons over time, so I guess when they introduce them, you kind of have to size them up. You're on your own. Hmm. But so far, it's fun. It's big. It's just a lot of things to remember. Every time you pass a mission, all these new little events open up for you at school while you're waiting for the next mission to happen. They'll say 12 hours until next mission, and then everything you do takes away 2 hours. So you kind of just have to walk around the school and look for events and people to talk to. It's fun. I don't know. I'm having a good time so far. That it's spring break, I'll have more time to play it too.
Just so long as it's not as complicated as Dissidia. I played that for like 15 minutes. I'm like, I have no idea what's happening. The controls are nuts.
Dissidia was ridiculous.
Yeah.
I still remember like looking at the board and wondering why I'm moving these little pieces across this board and what does this mean and why am I doing this. And story of that game was everywhere. I wish they just introduced it as a fighting game, but they wanted to like try and put a story to it. And
yeah,
I prefer the energy drink.
Yeah,
that existed, right?
Dissidia Energy,
maybe,
right? That was a thing.
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Probably. You're going to Google it right now, aren't you?
I sure am.
I thought you were talking about that one fighting game that Cloud and what's his name was in. It was like Energy or...
You mean Urgeist?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That one, yeah. That was a weird
one. I hope I pronounced that right. It's actually a German word.
What is that, Arthur?
Potion is a brand of drinks named after the reoccurring healing item in the Final Fantasy series. It is produced by Suntory, a Japanese beverage company, for the release of Final Fantasy XII, the 10th anniversary of Final Fantasy VII, and Dissidia Final Fantasy.
Oh, potion. Gotta go to eBay and pick some of that up.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it tastes delicious. I remember
that's like the first time they've done that. That kind of thing. They did that for Mega Man. They started releasing the E-Tank energy drinks.
Japan gets cool things like that, and we get mac and cheese with Star Wars characters on
it. I'm sorry. Is this interpretation of cool things?
Thanks America.
I guess the can looks kind of cool. Probably tastes like garbage.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I want liquid cactuar. That would be
a good drink. Bottle looks so cool for these potions, though.
Yeah.
The cans for the Final Fantasy stuff look, or the 7 stuff look cool, at least.
But yeah, I'm having fun with it. Arthur, you played the 15 demo?
Yeah, a little bit. I actually didn't even finish it. It's actually kind of long, right?
Yeah, kind of long, kind of boring.
A little boring. You know, what's the term? Character design for the costume specifically really blew me away. The level of creativity that they must have had in the back room of that studio. What do you want to do for this character, guys? How about all black? Sounds good to me. How about this one? All black. Even better.
That's the problem that I really have with this group is that you look at them and they are not bros. That group of characters you'll never see them hanging out together.
Yeah.
Ever.
But like, wasn't that the point of it? Like, they're supposed to be bros? Like, just a bunch of bros hanging out.
The car
road
trip.
All I know is that British character is disgusting. They need to really do something about that guy because it's not his voice work. His voice work's fine. Just having him there is terrible.
They need the token British guy?
Yeah, like, what?
I mean, I honestly can't get past the fact that they made all of them wear nothing but black. Like, black shirt, black undershirt, black pants, black shoes. All four of them. Like, honestly?
Team Sephiroth, go.
Yeah.
It's Square Enix.
Hey, you like Sephiroth, right? How about all four of them? You know, I'm surprised one of them even has blonde hair. Like, that's amazing that they really skewed that far. Even, like, the tattoos are black. Like, are you
kidding
me? It's
because it's supposed to be edgy and dark and cool.
Oh, man. Almost cut myself in all this edge, you know?
Mm-hmm. I can't handle all this complex Final Fantasy, man. It's intense.
Yeah.
Do you think the game will change when it releases?
No.
So scornful, Justin.
Like, why wouldn't you release a demo for kind of constructive criticism?
Square Enix we're talking about.
I mean, how long has this game been in development? Like 7 centuries? I don't think they're even in a position to
exactly
change it. I mean, technically, they could just go into like the movie file, like the Adobe Premiere file, and switch the hex coloring for the overcoat so that they could change that, right? I mean, it's probably more complicated than that. I'm probably being rude.
I did, however, enjoy the opening movie where they wake up in a tent and the kind of the cell phone goes off and they kind of all pass it around. I don't know. It's good. It looks good.
I mean, the graphic fidelity is very good. I think it is very pretty looking. I just think the actual the stuff you're looking at, not like the nuts and bolts, like the creative side of it. The creative side of it just seems kind of uninspired, I think.
Well, that's because Square Enix has become a bimbo company. They're pretty, but there's not a lot of substance to the games.
Yeah,
not lately.
That's what I mean.
I compare how we talk about Square to how we talk about Nintendo, how we're always just trying to help them, push them in the right direction. It's always either Square or Nintendo.
Both of them make mistakes, and both of them had some really great stuff in the past. That's the problem, you know?
Right. Yeah, but the you know, not to be too negative, because I will say the combat system in the demo for 15, I actually like that a lot. I think it's really fun. I liked the tutorial, and I liked the few battles that there were, which is rare, because even the attempts at faster-based combat in, like, 12 or even 10-2, or I don't know what other examples to pull from. I'm not a huge JRPG guy. I've never really liked those attempts to make it faster, but this actually, it seemed super intuitive, and I could see where they could be going with it, and how it could be more complex in later on in the game, like when it gets to like 20 hours in or 30 hours in or 50 hours in. So I liked all that stuff. I liked actually playing the game. I'm just not looking forward to the dozens and dozens of hours of cutscenes And I don't know why you liked the opening cutscene, because it was basically some dude answering the phone, them talking about nothing, us learning nothing about the characters or the story, and us just
I just like the idea of it. You know, it's like he's waiting to wake up, and I don't know. I thought it was really adorable.
Adorable.
It was adorable.
He digs the bromance.
Yeah. Okay.
But this is while I had no idea, like, the characters and everything and how it all worked. This is like when it first opened, I thought it was really nice.
Okay.
I was like, oh, this is cool. They're passing around the phone, waking everybody up. They're camping. Yeah. Like that Coleman stuff is ridiculous. But other than that, you're right. When you level up, you can't unlock skills in the demo.
Yeah.
So there is more to this combat system that we are not allowed to experience yet.
Yeah.
What I can say, I don't know if I liked it. I guess it's okay. I just wish that there was a way to switch to other characters. Maybe there is later on.
I'd like that too.
Yeah. Because I don't even know what those guys are doing half of the time. And then suddenly they die, and I'm just like, okay, I don't even know where you were, man.
I mean, to be fair, or like to be cynical, honestly, I remember in Final Fantasy XIII, there were bosses that did AoE attacks based on where characters were standing, but you had no control over where to place your characters, so I really doubt that you'll have control over that.
You're right.
Which is unfortunate.
They do it in Type-0 though, where you switch characters really easily, just right or left on the D-pad, and your character's switched fast, and it's really cool. That way you can kind of switch if you want to use a magic wielder, put that person in your team, and then just switch to a ranged attacker. Really cool. I like it, and I wish that Tabata kind of carries that over to 15. That is what I've been playing. I've also been playing Helldivers, but I feel like I've talked enough about that to let you guys know that it is a very great game.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Arthur got a little taste. A little taste of that Helldiver. Over the last week, there was a huge attack on the bug colony. It lasts 24 hours, and basically it's double experience while you're trying to take down the enemy base. It's pretty cool. It's like this whole community ran thing, so once the time hits that they're gonna attack, everybody kind of gangs up on these planets. There's three
is
of them.
Is everybody just attacking the bugs? Because when I was playing, it just looked like, yo, fuck the bugs, and then nobody was attacking the androids or the
Yeah, I think it hit a certain point to where everybody wanted to attack the bugs because they were close to defeating them.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
I tried fighting the other races with my friends, and the cyborgs were okay. That could be a little interesting change of pace. And then we tried doing like the like super aliens, whatever.
The like metal were, like, guys.
Not metal.
Are they like white robots?
They weren't robots. They were like the Protoss equivalent.
Yeah. They like shocked you and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
They like shoot like very far away. There's like side waves.
They
destroyed us. Like we played on not very difficult settings, and they wiped us out. So
I don't have a problem with them. I do have a problem with those cyborgs, man. They're really so hard, and it's. And then out of nowhere, these huge guys with Gatling guns come out and then just start shooting you.
I guess it depends on your loadout. Like, we were rolling with shotguns because of the bugs. So if you have shotguns, the bugs and the cyborgs are pretty easy. But against the Psy aliens, like, near impossible because they're so far away. So.
Yeah, I have a tank in my loadout now that I just... Me and my friends just roll around and just run over guys, and
nice.
Pretty cool. Yeah, if you get a chance to get the tank, there's a trophy unlock if you get everyone in on Friday.
Okay. Yeah, if I ever get the game, I'll totally let you know. But
yeah,
you know, I'm restricted together, to my friend's house.
So it looks like that's it for what we're playing today. We'll come back with the news. Thanks for listening. and welcome back to the Total Control. We're going to start talking about the topic of the week, and that is, do modern games baby us? Now, guys, it's just a question that I want to kind of bounce off of you in terms of now that Bloodborne's out and it's the difficulty is pretty hard, and we do things like that's the Demon Soul, or that's the Dark Souls of mobile games, or that's the Dark Souls of action game or adventure games or whatever. You know, like people just use this term to describe hard games now. But if I remember, games were really hard for me growing up, and now it seems that tutorials last an hour or two, or in terms of Final Fantasy 13, 20 hours. Yep. But what do you guys think about modern games and their difficulty?
I think it's more so to do with the design ideologies right now. It's very, like, the games are designed with a different mindset than they were back then. Back then, they were designed with that kind of, like, arcade or even, like, amusement park game mindset, where you have a game that is very hard to play but is winnable, but also has a very intricate set of rules, as in you need to play by these specific set of rules in order to get anywhere in the game. Whereas today, we're kind of catering towards the player, as opposed to the player trying to adapt his or her skills towards the rules of the game. Does that make any sense at all?
Yeah, but maybe not.
But maybe try
to explain what you're saying.
I think with games today, it's more so there's just a change in interest from both the developer point of view and also the consumer point of view. Before, there was an emphasis on creating video games with a specific set of rules, mainly because there wasn't really a standard back then. It was kind of just everybody had their own style. This is how the game's going to be made. For example, Spelunker on the NES. Infamously hard game. People both hate it. Other people love it. I personally think it's genius, but a lot of people don't like it. Because it's a platformer where you cannot jump the full arc of a jump. If that makes you'll die in midair. But and that threw a lot of people off. Like a lot of people go into it expecting it to be Mario. But here's the thing: Spelunker is designed with a very specific set of rules, and you need to adapt your own skills to those rules in order to get anywhere in Spelunker. If they release Spelunker today, the exact same way it was on the NES, people would hate it. And I know there's Spelunker HD on the PS4, but I don't even think that game's that popular. But yeah, like people wouldn't like it. Today it's more about we're catering to the gamers and to the consumers, as opposed to them trying to really go out of their way to learn the game. I think that's all.
Yeah. But with a game like Bloodborne getting really good reviews and selling copies and being super popular right now on actually just one console, I think people want the freedom of a hard game, and they don't want their handheld throughout the entire thing. Yeah. I remember, Mario and Luigi's Dream thing? What was it?
Dream Team.
Dream Team?
Yeah.
I remember that game was totally, like, it was an RPG, but there was tutorials everywhere, and it's like they didn't trust you to figure it out on your own, or give you, like, little hints here and there. They just kind of told you, oh, do this now, do this, you know, and it's just,
yeah.
And that's supposed to be an RPG, you know. I don't remember Paper Mario being so much of a tutorial.
But I think it's also, And once again, it goes back to what I say. I think it's just a change in interest on the consumer end, because nowadays people are really interested in just jumping into a game, playing it for a little bit, and being done with it, as opposed to, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to learn this game and appreciate every single aspect of it. Nowadays we have games versus like, I need this game to be 10 hours long so I can finish it this weekend and move on with my life. There are a lot of people who see games that are, you know, 20 plus hours long, and they say, oh, this is too much for me. I don't want to sit down and have to really invest that much time into it.
I think they're just afraid that they're going to lose their audience if they make it too hard from the get-go. That's why the niche is still there, is because there's people who want to invest a lot of time and effort learning the mechanics,
right,
mastering it, playing it. Sorry, what you were saying something, Arthur?
No, that's fine. I was saying that I think these are some interesting points, but something that shouldn't be overlooked is that more people are playing games today than ever before, and that becomes true again tomorrow and the day after that as well. And the thing is that different people are playing games for different reasons as the years go on. So these people who were playing games back in the day, and a game that was very popular back in the day, that means something very different than compared to today. So Spelunker, for example, the PS4 version today is not very popular, but maybe the same amount of people are playing it today that they were back then. So maybe it's not losing its audience, but just the type of people who are playing games for that reason aren't the majority anymore. So the sort of the focus to a different type of game that's like what Justin was talking about, like how a lot of people want to play a game that's like, I just want to play this for the weekend for 10 hours and it needs to be done after that, because after that, I'm just not going to play it anymore. That's probably true, but I don't know if that's an evolution of gamers or if that's a new gamer who has shown up all of a sudden.
I think it's a bit of both, actually.
Yeah, you know, as I said that, I actually kind of felt the same way, because I've started feeling that way some of the time. There are some times where I want to play Dragon Age Inquisition for 3 months, and that's all I want to do. And then sometimes I just want to play a game over the weekend because, you know, I don't always want to have my life taken over by a game when one comes out. I think there's a big push towards that. But on the concept of if games are babying us, the thing with Bloodborne and Souls and tutorials, specifically the thing that you were talking about with tutorials, the thing that really gets me, that really pisses me off these days, is the tutorials and just the lack of trust that developers don't think players can figure things out, and that like they don't trust that we can know where to go. And like one of the best experiences that I remember from playing games was Oblivion. There's the tutorial that takes like an hour in the prison, and then once you get out into the world, it's this huge, expansive open world. They give you a general idea where to go, just in case you need that. But then otherwise, it's just like, okay, I don't know, figure it out, and that's it. And these days, games never do that. And when they do, they're usually the weird ones, and people write about how it's so weird that they don't do that anymore. And that's really the stuff that doesn't happen anymore. And maybe it doesn't have to be an open world game in order to do that anymore. It's even just stuff like I don't know, like character action games. I feel like they need to go through every single tutorial and they need to tell you what every single thing on the HUD does, and they need to tell you what every single combination could possibly do while you play the game. You know, they don't just trust you to figure out things on your own. And that lack of sense of discovery that you used to get from games, I feel, isn't as prevalent as it used to be, which is disappointing, I feel. And we are moving towards that. But I think we're also getting a pushback from that because people are realizing it. And I feel like every week on Kickstarter, we keep hearing people talk about that the developers are talking about how they want to make the games that they were playing when they were younger. And they are actively not having the type of things that we're talking about right now. So I think hopefully the industry will balance it out in some way.
See, on the other end, there's games like Justin's talking about, the Tokyo Twilight Ghost Hunters, where they don't tell you anything about how to play.
Yeah.
And I wonder if games suffer from not enough hand-holding, you know? Not a ton, but enough to explain the basics, you know?
I always feel like the best way to do that is to, at least for Tokyo Twilight Ghost Hunters, I think they should have had at least a page just showing it, or even having a part of the game that kind of blended that together to kind of introduce that to you, because there's so much that isn't told and it's not exactly obvious, because it's not only different in the game, it's also different for the genre too. Like, it's not something that you would expect to see. And I think that's why Tokyo Twilight Ghost Hunters kind of confuses myself, and I'm sure it confuses a lot of other people that played it.
So how would you feel if someone said that Tokyo Twilight Ghost Hunters was the Demon Souls of visual novels? Like, this is kind of what I want to back up a little bit, take a few steps back, where people use the term Demon Souls as they would throw it around like they would a Metroidvania. Like, this is a Metroidvania title, you know? This is like the Demon Souls of this. But can't the game just be hard? Why does it have to be the Demon Souls of something?
You know, it's funny. We actually spoke about this.
Yeah.
We spoke about this when Carly was on a bit. Like, and I remember I made a comment about how someone called Mario Kart 8 Demon Souls on wheels. You know?
Yeah.
It's gotten to the point. I guess it's just because Demon Souls is kind of the well-known hard game, I guess. And in a weird way, it stands out because of it. Whereas, you know, there's a time where that kind of gameplay was the norm. So I guess the reason it's become kind of a thing and kind of a label is just that's just what people think of. You talk about hard games, it's, oh, yeah, Demon Souls. Oh, man, this Zelda game's hard. Hero mode is so hard. It's like Demon Souls, when it's not at all like Demon Souls.
I think it's because Demon Souls is kind of like an old school type of difficulty where it's kind of like it's not difficult because it's like a cheap difficult where they just make ridiculous demands from you that are impossible, because the main thing about the difficulty in Demon Souls is, for example, like, I've played the first level of Demon Souls a billion times at this point. And again, like, when I played it for the first time in 6 years this past month or so, I went through the first time without dying once because I had already done it so many times all those years ago. And like, I know it like the back of my hand. I didn't have any problems. So now it's no problem. And for a lot of people who played NES games, like, there are people who probably, I don't know anybody like this because it's so ingrained in gamer culture, but maybe somebody died on the first level of Mario 1-1. You know, I don't know anybody like that. But, like, the concept of somebody dying on that first level now is insane because they just know it so well, right? So that's what they think of when they think of that difficulty. Like, it's fair in a way.
And if you think of to talk about the Mario thing, the way that first level is set up is the perfect tutorial. Exactly. They teach you, if you stand still in this one spot, this Goomba is going to kill you.
Right.
Exactly. How do you get over this Goomba? Oh, you can jump over the Goomba. Okay. All right. The way they introduce every mechanic in that first level, they have a star in there. You can get a flower in there. It's like that first level is the perfect way to introduce mechanics to a game.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And I mean, the Soul series, there's a bunch of games like that. It's not just the Soul series. And I wish there were like articles, or maybe I could write articles like that, of more games that teach you things without just having a block of text that shows up and telling them directly to you. Because most games teach you things constantly, and they don't need to come up and tell you that you just learned
something. Stop everything to make you read this page of text and then have you take a tutorial on it. And
right, exactly. I mean, in Zelda Ocarina of Time, like, how quickly did you learn when the dude shot the Deku Nut at you and you held up the shield and then the nut went back at him and then he went down back in? Did you realize that what worked on the other guys wasn't going to work on him this time? You know, like, you figured it out immediately. You didn't need a tutorial saying like, uh-oh, that's not going to work on this guy. Like, you're not an idiot. But, okay, let's not get off topic, I guess. But, like, back to what you're saying, I feel like Demon's Souls is just popular for being difficult, and people like that it's difficult. So, like what Justin was saying, it's sort of become popular for that one trait about it. So it's sort of become this, it's become synonymous with it. So rather than being, people just like, I don't know, it's like the equivalent of saying a meme at this point. So people like being culturally relevant, so they're just like, it's the souls of blah blah blah, you know. And it probably doesn't have much meaning anymore since people just repeat it ad nauseum. But I think the souls series just kind of represents returning back to conventions that people always liked, but they disappeared for some reason that nobody knows. And they're just glad they're back again. So,
and I think that's another reason for that, which is related to the Soul series, is, for example, the Soul series, I mean, I didn't get too far into Dark Souls, but from what I've heard, it doesn't spell the story out too much to you. Like, it's not like just cutscenes after cutscenes, which is another evolution of the game industry, starting from I want to say the PlayStation era. Well, actually, I shouldn't say it was a PlayStation era that started it, but that's when it got really popular. And that was when video games were starting to become a bit more cinematic and relying on telling a story through cutscenes as opposed to gameplay. And I think as the years have gone on, developers are starting to shift focus towards telling the story through cutscenes as opposed to actual gameplay. And I feel a lot of consumers and a lot of people playing these video games, that's what they kind of want. And if you've been noticing lately, there have been games coming out where they just completely cut out the gameplay. For example, isn't there a version of 999 that doesn't have any puzzles on the iPhones? Yeah. Some shoot 'em ups, actually. Cave had a – was it Cave that published it? What was that game? Caladrius, I think?
Yeah, I think you're right. Caladrius. Yeah.
Caladrius. This is a bullet hell shoot 'em up. There's a mode in this bullet hell shoot 'em up where you don't take any damage. Like, you are invincible to every single shot. And the reason they did that is so you can just enjoy the story.
Yeah, and there was the BioWare developer who received a lot of criticism for saying that she wished that there was a way to skip the gameplay parts of games. So these people exist in the industry who wished that there was less games in games.
And I think that we're really starting to get to that ever since games like Metal Gear Solid came along that really popularized the whole cinematic experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a huge inferiority complex feeling in the video game industry, where a lot of people feel like that they're kind of a lesser medium, and there are things that they can't do. So they want to crib off of things and another medium that they feel like is more reputable, which is movies. And I can understand why they would do that, because for a long time it wasn't really clear what video games do better, and it still isn't exactly clear what they do better. Mm-hmm. But there are starting to be more and more games that sort of point out what it is they can do better. And one of those series is Souls, the Souls series in Bloodborne. I mean, there are other examples, and I could name them. I could say like Braid or something like that, and people are quick to say like, well, you just want to be pretentious and talk about like, well, you're just going to talk about art games and such. But ideally, you should. What you should be getting the most out of a game is what you get by playing it. And you only get the story from Dark Souls or Demon Souls by playing it and through the conventions in the game. Like how you respawn in Dark Souls is part of the world in the game. Like, that's explained in the narrative. And it's explained through item descriptions and, dialogue that you get from NPCs. It's not through a cutscene or something like that. And that might seem kind of juvenile or pointless, because it's like, why not just explain it in a cutscene or, right, like, you know, something that a movie could have just done. But it matters in a way, and it adds up, and it feels like you're in a world. So that it contributes. We're not really talking about difficulty anymore, though. So, yeah, Azario, please steer us to the shore.
Well, no, this is good, because it leads into my next topic, where games nowadays, when it comes to maybe bosses, you're not even totally fighting the boss anymore. You'll fight them to an extent, and then a quick time event.
Yeah.
And that's how you win the game. And I don't really know. I think God of War popularized the quick time events.
Yeah.
Or definitely.
But I don't really like them. And that's kind of why I like Demon's Souls a little bit, is like, you have to get that HP bar all the way to zero if you expect to win this.
Right.
Don't think that you're going to get it halfway, get a sweet quick time event that'll just take all his HP away. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So I know a lot of games do this, even on the Vita, on every system that I know that has an action game. I think that's kind of lowering, even if you have it on a hard difficulty, if you rely on those quick time events. Even I think Resident Evil has it now too.
Resident Evil 4 started doing it. Yeah. So
it's strange. I don't think we need those really in some of our games.
I think they are going away. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say real quick that some games quick time events make it harder. Like in the original Bayonetta. If you miss the timing, you're screwed, you know? So it's how they do things. It's not all quick time events are bad. I do see what you're saying. But even with the tutorial thing, it's how they're integrated into the game, you know? If it feels genuine or if it feels rushed and kind of too hand-holding, I don't know.
Yeah. But
we should.
I digress.
I was gonna say I was gonna do a segue for you. I had one in mind.
Oh, let's do it.
Oh go man! Speaking of movies,
that's kind of why I mentioned Metal Gear.
Are too focused on movies. There was news this past week that Hideo Kojima is leaving Konami.
Yeah,
that's like you take it away.
I think this is great news.
Why do you think it's great?
I think it's okay news as well, actually.
I feel that it's the Metal Gear series will continue, even when Kojima's not there.
Officially, they did say it will continue.
yeah. So with that in mind, I feel like that series needs some new ideas in it. I would really like that. I think. Kojima can focus on some other things. What I'm kind of upset about, though, is that the Silent Hills game, I don't know what's the deal with that, but to focus on the news a little, Konami did say that he is leaving but staying on for the production of Metal Gear Solid
Phantom Pain.
Phantom Pain. Mm-hmm. So he will be there for that. But they've kind of taken him off the Twitter and all that. They've changed most of the stuff.
They took his names off of the covers.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, so...
That's like some bad blood maneuvering.
Yeah, that's kind of messed up.
Yeah.
He's done this before where he said he was leaving, so...
That's like my daughter started dating a black guy. Like, forget it.
Oh my god.
Wow.
We went there.
I'm serious. Like, that's like some. I'm serious. Like, in terms of, like, actual, like, we are no longer related. I am going to shame you out of existence type of thing. Like, removing your name from the thing that everybody knows he made. Like, that's so petty. Like, what the hell?
It could be some sort of. Rights thing about money going to certain parties. I don't know if that would have anything to do with it.
Maybe.
I don't know if it can affect the game this far. If he's still working on it, he might not care about it anymore. Metal Gear is his baby, you know, that's his thing. And it will continue after him, whether it goes in the right direction or not. I feel something needs to happen. Watching the Phantom Pain and what it's introducing, I don't really get it yet. I want to. Yeah. It just doesn't look like a Metal Gear game to me, where you're just sending cars and enemies in the air and stuff. I just don't understand really. So I think I really need to get my hands on it.
I think if you understood what was going on, then it wouldn't be a Metal Gear game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, true. Soldiers, I mean, there's clearly a well-defined conflict. Obviously, I know what's going on. It's a Metal Gear game.
And when I started not liking Metal Gear is around Snake Eater.
What are you talking about?
Oh, no.
I love that one. That's fun.
Really, the whole eating thing, and I just didn't like it.
It's kind of weird, but like the bosses are the best one.
I did like the way that if you didn't load up your save file, that sniper guy would die. If you didn't load it up for a week, he would...
Yeah, if you were like a wuss and didn't want to actually fight him.
I fought him, dude. Okay. I just...
Sure.
Dude, I fought him. I'm not a wuss, all right?
Sure, okay, yeah. Yeah, sometimes when I die in Dark Souls, I rip the power cord out, but I'm not a wuss.
It's a hard reset. It's just, there's a little button in the back there. You switch that off real fast. Before it's done loading, before it auto-saves.
I'm still really skeptical that they're going to do Metal Gear without Kojima. Just to compare it to Inafune and Mega Man, I mean, he left and we haven't had anything Mega Man from Capcom. So it's like, yeah, how are they going to do the same thing?
Konami doesn't have anything other than
they don't have any games.
That's true.
And any game that they put out has been a humongous screw up.
Okay. They used to have Castlevania and then they fucked that up.
You guys ready? Yeah. Do you guys know what Konami's biggest source of income is?
Hmm.
Mobile games?
Health clubs. In Japan. So they don't give a fuck about Metal Gear if they don't need to. But the more important thing is that Konami did release a press release related to all this stuff, and they didn't say straight up like, hey, Kojima's leaving, but who needs him? But they did say like, Metal Gear will continue with many creative minds in the future. You know, like they were saying like, basically, hey, if the main guy leaves, the series will continue. So they're preparing for his departure with the series in mind. And maybe they'll only make one game and maybe it'll suck and then they won't make any more after that. But I think we'll get at least one more. Maybe it'll be directed by J.J. Abrams or something. But you know, we'll get at least one.
David Hayter will return.
M. Night Shyamalan. Go.
Which series without its creator will do better, Star Wars or Metal Gear? Find out in the next few years.
Honestly, yeah. I would love to see Kojima start his own studio. I think
he's insane. Done with Metal Gear. He can create something so amazing without that tie to produce Metal Gear. You
exactly.
Know?
Like he's done so. And the thing is, nobody knows his other works. Actually, I shouldn't say nobody, but a lot of people. They think Kojima, they think Metal Gear, but he's done so many other cool projects other than Metal Gear.
Isn't there like two others, like Zone of Enders and that GBA game?
One of them. Snatcher's another. Police Knot's another one. All three are really cool. Oh, there's also Boktai. Better you guys know that one on the Game Boy.
I do know Boktai. Yeah, that's a really weird game, but it's fun.
That was a really weird one, but it had a cool concept to it.
Outside, but there's no
back. Yeah, it's outside. But, like, he can do all these really cool things. And if he has his own studio, which I'm sure he can make his own studio. That guy has probably made so much money off of Metal Gear. He can probably do it. He can make his own studio. He's free to...
Is he taking the Fox engine with him?
Oh,
that's a good question.
That's a great question. Unless he made it all by himself, which I doubt he did.
That's true.
But here's the thing. I'm sure he can do better than Metal Gear. I want to see him... do more than just, okay, let's make a Metal Gear game because it's safe. I want to see him actually try and push himself and make something truly awesome, truly innovative, the way he used to do it.
Okay, and then he's technically an executive producer. Yeah. I was going to say he was technically an executive producer for Castlevania Lords of Shadow in 2010. But, yeah, before that, the last game he made that was not Metal Gear was... Boktai 2 in 2004. Oh, wait, never mind. There's something called Lunar Knights in 2006.
That's also part of Boktai.
Oh, yeah. That's a weird game, too.
So coming up on a decade ago.
Yeah.
And also,
he's a smart guy. He's also a really smart guy. And he has a creative mind, so I don't think anything will come from him being on his own. I think he'll still produce great games. And getting a new set of brains on the Metal Gear franchise will bring probably more innovative ways to play that game. I mean, there's still stories to be told. That world is huge. I mean, you can go anywhere, it looks like, from past to present. But I'm excited because I didn't really like. I enjoyed Peace Walker. So I'm hoping that I will enjoy this, but from 2 to Peace Walker, I didn't really like any of the Acid games or anything like that.
I just counted since 1987, this guy has made 13 Metal Gear games. That's not including re-releases. This guy has been working on Metal Gear for a very long time.
And you know what? You guys played Metal Gear Solid 4, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Metal Gear Solid 4, I don't even consider a Metal Gear Solid game. It's a Kojima-like anthology game. There are so many nods and jokes and references to all of his works in that one game. If you look hard enough, like, they're everywhere. There's a scene, spoilers, where, you know, you're in the streets and you're wearing that jacket that's like Gillian Seed's jacket from Snatcher. Like, one of the wallpapers is a Zone of the Enders wallpaper. There's even a brief glimpse of that Penguin game that he developed for the MSX back in like the late 80s. You know, like, this guy's just done so much. He can do so much more than just Metal Gear. And I want to see him do more in the Metal Gear. And also, I want to see Konami not do Metal Gear and actually, you know, use one of Hudson's IPs for once.
Bomberman Go.
Bomberman Go.
Bonk's. Bonk's Adventure.
Bonk's Adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Rest in peace, Hudson Soft. That's actually, that's the reason why I stopped downloading PSP games. When Hudson Soft closed, I felt responsible because I was a pirate. Mm. Not anymore. I've changed my ways.
You are a pirate.
You just admitted that on the internet.
I know, right?
Can you do that? I don't think they can give it. They don't have any proof.
What was your name again? Azario Lopez.
All Hudson right. breaks through the window.
No, they don't give a shit.
The internet also. Police come. Consequences will never be the same.
I backtraced it. You know that guy died, so those jokes aren't as funny anymore.
Poor guy, man.
Jeez, internet is weird.
He done goofed. Anyway, I'll see if I'll edit that part out or not.
Sure. Stay tuned. Video games.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm excited. But moving on, guys, Trails in the Sky has the second chapter has been rated by the ESRB. And this is really cool. This what it typically means the game will come out, not really there's no real
date. Actually that doesn't confirm it. Cause
it kind of does.
Yeah, but remember, there have been times where we've gotten trolled like that. We did get trolled like that for Suikoden 2. We did get trolled like that for Earthbound, even though both did eventually come out. It was just like way...
Yeah, it was like years in advance, you're right. They kind of just do it just...
They do it like to guarantee it, like in case they do release it.
Yeah, but this game I don't think will come out for a while only because there's so much text to localize.
And I think I've said that before, too, that there's just a lot that they need to translate and put together.
But it's exciting. It's good news. So look out for that because the more people that are kind of excited about it, maybe the other titles will get. I know Evolution was announced for Japan, or like a limited edition for it, or something like that. But I don't like to get. I don't like to look at that news because I get really jealous, sad. And I'm a jealous person. You're learning so much about me today.
First but, the piracy stuff. And we learned your last name was Lopez, and then you lived in California.
I don't know how much of this show I'm gonna have to edit out now. But yeah, we'll close the news portion out, and we'll come back with our Kickstarter, and then end the show. Talk to you in a bit. Hello and welcome back to the Total Control. We are going to close out the show with some Kickstarter news. Tonight we're going to talk about... I've been saying this name wrong for so long. that I can't say it right anymore.
Pytron. What are you talking about?
Pytron.
No, Pytron. Yeah.
Pytron. How do you say it, Josh?
Pythotron.
Pythotron. This is a 2.5D shoot 'em up. The last 2.5D shoot 'em up that I played was Einhinder for the PlayStation.
That's a great game, actually.
Yeah. But here we go. Yeah. 10 years later, I'm looking at this game. It looks great. Colors look good. It's a shoot 'em up. I love shmups. I don't know. What are your experiences with shmups, Arthur?
With me? With my experience with shmups?
Yeah. You like them?
Well, that one level in Nier was quite the trip. Does anyone play Nier?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the Drakengard game.
Yeah.
What's related to it?
There was a shmup.
Okay. Sorry, Justin. It's related to it. I worry.
And then I think I played, what was that game that was usually like an arcade cabinet? It was like a World War II.
Galaga.
I don't think it was Galaga.
Galaga.
It was probably Galaga. Anyway, this game is looking for $5,000. It has $800. Pledged as of now with 20 days to go. I think this game should get its $5,000. It's not like he's asking for like 100 or 60. This game looks good.
It's really cheap.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting the way that they speed it up a little bit. You can collect orbs and it kind of pushes you around these asteroids that are flying at you. I don't know. Check this game out because it looks really good. And he's not flooding the rewards with all these different tiers and stuff. For $5, you can get this game as a digital copy for Windows, Mac, or Linux.
It appears, by the way, that it's made by one person. He says that he's invested over $4,000 of it on his own and intends to invest another $2,000 in it. But he's just asking for more money from a community of some sort. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his name is TJ Townsend, and he seems to be he's really passionate about it.
Which sounds okay to me because that's the same last name as my favorite character from the OC, so got my vote.
Dude, the OC was my favorite show.
Oh man, TJ Townsend.
Dude, remember that part where Trey was shot? It's like, what'd you say?
Yeah, that was dramatic.
That also leads into my favorite SNL short. Like Dear Shia Sister, LaBeouf. I think.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen Dear Sister for SNL, it's one of the best shorts they have.
Check that out first, then go to this Kickstarter.
Yeah. But it has a demo that you can play.
That's good.
Yeah. There's a $500 tier where you can incorporate a name of your choosing into the game and receive special thanks in the game credits. This is funny because we're looking at the names of the worlds before and they look pretty made up already. So it looks like he covered all the bases of like obscure universe names.
Gibberish.
Yeah. It's funny. I can't even imagine creating a world though, or a universe, say the least. But it's a non-linear. It's a non-linear game. You can play levels at your leisure. So
something I want to touch on about this guy at the bottom. He mentions that he has been making small-scale games as a hobby for over 24 years, and that he worked in the industry as an artist for video game marketing on games like Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy X, among others. So. He might have some idea of what he's doing, although it does say marketing, so maybe it's not directly related to game development. But he's got some stuff done. It looks like he at least has a plan on what he wants to do. So, you know.
Yeah, and he's there's a game coming out for PS4 where one guy did it. I forgot the name of it.
The Witness, perhaps you've heard of it?
No.
He has a whole team working on that anyway.
It's that kind of Metroidvania style game coming out for the PS4.
Axiom Verge.
Yeah. Yes, that's the game made by one guy. So it's possible if If you have the passion, this game looks great. I love power-ups and shmups, and this one looks like it overdoes it to the max, which is awesome. Coming from someone who... there's games that don't have good power-ups, and that's all I look for in a shmup, is being OP.
And then
getting shot down, getting shot down by that stray bullet that you don't see on the screen and just getting really upset and all your power-ups go away.
Yep.
Usually that's what I like.
Yeah. Usually I get shot down by women on the street, but that's a close shot.
Oh.
That's probably a little more painful than getting exploded.
Yeah. But you don't have to lose a TV by throwing a controller
that's
in it.
That's true.
But, yeah. There's pros and cons.
I mean, I usually have one with me out on the streets.
The throw controller. I game everywhere.
Always they tell me life's not a game, but I beg to differ, you know?
This game also has some, I don't know what you would call it. Like, you move boxes with your ships. I would say it's like a platforming kind of thing. Like, you move boxes to stop things from crushing you that are coming down, and you can use it to help you. So that's kind of like platforming. It's cool. Someone should really check this out. I'll be sure to post about it too. That's Pythotron.
Yeah, if the developer could email the show and let us know how to pronounce his game, that would be great. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, by TJ Townsend. Dude, great game. Well done. Any plugs, guys, before we close out the show?
Oh, we're not looking at other ones?
No, I think we'll just do one for tonight.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
That's fine.
I don't know if we've mentioned the raindrops segment, but I just wanted to bring that up for our viewers that we were doing that on the site. I think we have like three or four of them up on the site. Just talks about like what things people like about gaming, music, all sorts of different things. So getting to know our staff better.
Yeah, I saw that. It's really interesting. I haven't done one yet though. I don't feel like I'm interesting enough. I've been doing a weekly editorial on obscure or overlooked PlayStation games called Buried Treasure. So there's that. Mostly it's just a journal of me as a 10-year-old, though.
I read the Einhander one. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Buried Treasure, Resident Evil 2.
Gran Turismo.
I really want to write one up about A Bug's Life, because that was one of my favorite PlayStation games growing up. You guys played A Bug's Life?
No.
Dude, Disney games used to be really good.
They did.
Maybe. Yeah.
Lion King.
Yeah, some of those licensed games actually weren't so terrible. I had like a weird memory lane that I went down recently, and I remembered playing some of the Harry Potter games that came out around the time of the movies. They like weren't awful, which was kind of strange. So maybe some of them aren't so bad.
You are a real fan of the Harry Potter.
Yeah, man.
That's cool.
I'm reading the books.
Right now you're reading the books?
Yeah, because I'm kind of an idiot. I had this fear that my reading comprehension blows, so I've been trying to read more books as a New Year resolution. So I decided to start reading with some easy stuff, and I've been throwing in some more difficult stuff in between.
You should read Ready Player One.
Yeah, you know, that's going to be a movie, you know.
Someone told me that Ready Player One is the equivalent of 50 Shades of Grey in terms of level of quality of writing and popularity. So, I don't know, bro.
You have a lot of pretentious friends.
50 Shades? Are you kidding me with that?
Ready Player One is actually pretty good.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
read it.
If the point of what they were trying to make wasn't clear, they were just saying that it's a book that isn't very well written, but for some reason is very popular, is what they were trying to say.
I think people who play games just want a book to be popular that's about games. I don't know. Yeah, I haven't read it. I've heard very mixed reviews about it. But if Josh and Justin,
what's it about?
I don't know. About robots, I think. I read the back of the book.
Like virtual reality, if I remember correctly. It's been a while since I read it.
Tron.
Kind of like Sword Art or Dot Hack.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Mixed with a bunch of 80s pop culture.
Yeah.
Okay, you're just throwing words at Arthur.
Was it
right
written
now.
In the 80s?
No, it was written only a couple years ago.
Okay.
I would read The Road by John McCarthy. That's a good one.
It's a scary-ass movie, too.
One of the specific reasons I started doing this is because I own a copy of The Road. I have a bookmark at around 180 pages, which means I read all of those pages. I cannot tell you a single thing about that book. So,
that's one of my favorites.
I'll get to it at some point. I read Masters of Doom at some point. I actually like that one a lot. So
I just read The Da Vinci's Code last month.
Oh man,
I've been trying to do that too. A book a month. I haven't chose one for April.
I yet, do. So. Two books a month. Shit. I
have to take calculus classes and that.
Well, I'm unemployed. So.
Bring on the books.
Pretty much.
If you have any recommendations for Arthur on books that he should read, you can tweet him at
Arthur Augustine.
Arthur Augustine.
That works too if you want to pronounce my name differently than me.
You could tweet Justin at JustGiyu, Josh at Spirit of Destiny.
Yeah.
Josh, I remember your Twitter.
Sorry, it's been a while.
Spirit of Destiny. And me at Azario Says. And you can follow we have some good conversations going over on our Total Control Twitter at The Total Control. So follow us there and talk to us. We've been communicating a lot with a lot of the listeners and stuff there. It's a lot of fun. We ask you to please continue to read articles on the site and comment, because without them we wouldn't be a podcast. Thank you for listening.
Later.
Good night.